Hey, hey, welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we are on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Last.fm, and more. And we are also at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We are all about the movers and shakers in the music industry, finding all about careers in music, how to get that music job, what they did to get that music job, what was their career trajectory, what obstacles did they face, what did they learn along the way. You are going to get all that information right here. And make sure you go back and check out earlier episodes. We got so many amazing guests who dropped so much good knowledge and advice, so don't miss out. Last week in particular, we had an amazing guest, Adam Lewis, the co-founder of Planetary Group, a premier music promotion agency. It's been around for over two decades and has worked with so many incredible clients, everyone from the Buzzcocks to Yo Gabba Gabba, Portugal the Man, Katy Perry, everyone else in between practically. Great interview with Adam. He talked all about starting out actually in college radio, doing a record label out of his dorm room, and all the way out to Los Angeles, and what he learned along the way about music promotion. So actually also if you're an artist, just some great knowledge about all about music promotion. So go back and check it out. We will be here when you get back. Very excited for my next guest, Diana LaPointe. She is Senior Director of Music Licensing at Sony Music Entertainment, and I got to pick her brain all about her career trajectory, starting out at Berklee College of Music and then coming back out to LA, where she is from, her hometown, and talking about Warner Music and Sony. Really, really fascinating discussion all about her career and also about music licensing. So I think you guys are in for a big treat. But before we get to that, you know, I always got to start with a good track. And one of Diana's favorite tracks is actually off of Leon Bridges' new album that just dropped this past week, Good Thing. And here is the track, Beyond.
Scared to death that she might be it, that the love is real, that the shoe might fit. She might just be my everything. Beyond, beyond. Space and time in the afterlife. Will she have my kids? Will she be my wife? She might just be my everything. Beyond.
Hey, Diana, thank you so much for being on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about childhood. Like, where'd you grow up? What kind of music was going on in your household? That kind of thing.
So I grew up in LA. Music was a big thing in our household. My dad played piano and he always played classic rock records and all sorts, like, you know, Paul Simon and all sorts of eclectic music on his record player growing up. And I had two older brothers that were also pretty into music. And so I think that definitely influenced me. And they were always encouraging. I played piano probably around age seven for a few years and then got into guitar. My mom actually had an old guitar that was just lying around the house. And I started playing that when I was about 10 and then started formally taking lessons around sixth grade and then continued to play throughout middle school and throughout high school. And I mean, up until now. And I think that's definitely what sparked the interest in music and then my choosing to go to music school.
So tell me though about like who were you crushing on? What kind of pop stars were you crushing on when you were growing up?
Oh, wow. Well, like I said, I think I actually got into classic rock at an early age, thanks to my dad and my brothers. But, you know, when I really started to get into music, it was actually, heavy rock, like Guns N' Roses and,
nice.
Yeah. my first concert was a Tom Petty concert that, I won tickets off of a radio station. And I think that just really started or fed into my love of music and went to that Tom Petty concert. And just, there was no going back after that. Then every weekend was spent hanging out at, I mean, this is when there were record stores at at Tower Records and Music Plus to get concert tickets. And, you know, I think about it now, I think, how did I afford it? But I think, you know, right, shows are probably like at most $20. But I spent every weekend waiting in line for concert tickets and then just going to shows. So I do really have my parents to thank for letting me do that and driving me to shows before I had a license.
Yeah, that's amazing when you think about it, you know?
Yeah. I was really fortunate because, I mean, having kids myself now, I think about, would I let them do that? But
right.
I'm happy they did, you know? It's always just been a big part. I think they recognized how much I loved it. And so they just really want to encourage it.
Yeah, that's so cool. So, and also not for nothing, but tickets were actually affordable back then, right? It was like you could actually go for $20 and see legends like Tom Petty, et cetera.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
And then did you do any kind of bands or anything in high school?
I did, yeah. Always just jamming with friends. I played, like I said, I played guitar. And we would play at some parties and, you know, enter like Battle of the Bands.
nice.
That kind of thing. But, you know, I was never in college a bit. I had a band. It was actually a blues rock band and we again played parties. But, you know, I never really played at clubs or anything like that. I think I knew early on that I really wanted to get into the music business side of things. So, mm-hmm. Rather than totally going into performance. So it was kind of like just a fun thing to do. But I even early on, I was never set on like, oh, I want to be a touring musician or anything like that. I always knew I wanted to be on the business side.
Got it. So walk us through a little bit about going to college. And obviously, from my knowledge, at least, there wasn't really any music business courses, were there?
Because I graduated high school in 95, and there were really only two schools that I knew of that had a music business program. It was USC and Berklee College of Music in Boston. So, mm-hmm. And being from LA, I didn't really want to stay here. I knew I wanted to get away for college. And again, I was lucky mm-hmm. enough that my parents were able to help support me in that. And, you know, I didn't even visit Boston beforehand. I just thought, it sounds great to me. I'm going to go for it. And at the time I had a brother who had just, he had been in New York. He moved to New York after graduating from college in California. So I knew I at least had one relative that was going to be on the East Coast. But my family, we all hopped on a plane and they dropped me off in Boston and I ended up loving it. Berklee was great. And like I said, there weren't a lot of schools at the time. There was USC as well. But so it was a fairly new program, their music business program. I want to say it was maybe 5 years old by the time that I was there. So they were still kind of ironing out some kinks, but,
right.
You know, it was really great to go there because, the whole first 2 years were focused on, my instrument, and then kind of a
scattering
of music business classes, but I didn't get really heavily involved in that until about my junior year, where it was really more focused on a lot of business classes. And I had also studied some composition because for a while I was doing a double major in film scoring as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I decided, you know, I'd like to finish in 4 years rather than doing the double major. So I stuck with music business. But I do think that having that bit of coursework in film scoring, like conducting and composition, for sure helped me out down the road, even in what I do today. So it was a really great experience. And just being around all those other musicians and, again, just being able to, like, go in everybody in your dorm rooms and jam together and just sharing all those creative ideas was just so much fun. this really important.
Yeah, I think that's amazing, and I love that you were also into film scoring as well. Like, that's such a great space, and I think sometimes people have the perception that it's like, oh, it's only for people with a classical background, you know, and that's so not the case.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, even more so now with how much easier it is to record everything on your computer. I mean, that was really just kind of starting out when I was going to school there. It was with like Pro Tools, and that people didn't really start using that, I want to say, until it was closer to when I graduated. It's even easier now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now that you've gone through it, I mean, because again, yeah, business, it's funny, like some of my guests are like, you know, when I was at school, there was no such thing as music business courses or, you know, et cetera, major. So would you say now, would people need that type of education? Do you think it's really helpful for them? Or, you know, do you feel like it's absolutely necessary to, you know, go to music business school? Or what's your thoughts about that?
No, I don't think it is. But the advantage you're going to have, if you know it's something you want to go into, I think the school is going to be more well connected in getting you a job once you've graduated. So, but if you're looking for something that's maybe a little more well-rounded, I don't think it's impossible to just go to a regular school, study business, and then still go into music. That's mm-hmm. where then, of course, an internship's going to be really important. But, and like right. I said, when I was going to school, it was still a fairly new program, even for Berkeley. So I would think now it sounds like some of the other colleges that offer programs, they really have a good handle on it, and just and they have good guest teachers or, you know, guest professors that come in and share their expertise. So, yeah, but I don't think it's totally necessary. I think as long as if you have that passion for music, you could still find your way in there by getting an internship. Because I know, you know, working at Sony now, a lot of our interns, I'd say about half of them actually do have the music business background, but then the other half doesn't. And, you know, you have great candidates regardless. So it's more about that passion that you have for it. So.
Yeah, that's a great point. So tell me what happened after college. Were you doing internships while you were still at Berkeley?
I did. I did a handful, two that went for a longer period of time. One was actually with Aerosmith's personal management, was located in Boston.
Oh, wow.
So that was.
Yeah.
And then another one was for PolyGram Records, which doesn't exist anymore. And actually, when I interned there, it was my senior year. And towards the end of the internship was when Universal had bought them out. And they pretty much at the end of the internship said, you don't need to come in. We're shutting down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was great up until that point. I did get a lot of good experience. You know, this was also when record companies, they were bigger. And so they had branches in other major cities. So it wasn't just New York, LA, Nashville, every other major city like San Francisco, San Diego, and in this case, Boston, would have branch offices. And this was also because people were still buying CDs. And so they needed distribution in these other cities, and they needed people on the ground there going to the retail stores, to your Tower Records, to set up displays for new album releases. And if they were going to have artists, you know, come into the record store to do album signings and that kind of thing. So it was a great experience, but it really is interesting looking back at how that just none of that really exists anymore. But still, you know, it was great to learn from the people there. And, you know, that's the advice I would give is for anyone. First, I think the internship is key because that's going to be your connection to getting a job afterwards. If you do a good job interning, I mean, we've hired interns in our department several times since I've been there, and or recommend them to other companies where we know there's openings. What's really key about the internship, just going in and, you know, kind of doing the grunt work that they ask you to do, that's not enough. Like, you really need to speak with the people that are there, ask them about their jobs, because if you don't, they'll just kind of hand you a pile of work and ask you to do it. But if you really want to, you really want to learn for it, you know, make sure. And I know these days it probably is a little more structured, where they might set time aside to talk to you, but that might not be the case. Like, you got to show the initiative and say, hey, you know, I'd love if you have like 10 minutes to be able to just like sit down with you and talk about your job. And that's really how you're going to learn. And then the people there where you're interning are going to remember, like, hey, that person really showed initiative, that they wanted to learn more. And that will definitely make you stick out.
So, what did you do when PolyGram closed? You were your last year at Berkeley. Did you just, after graduation, did you just go back to LA?
Yeah, so I did. I know it was unfortunate, because I was thinking, oh, this will be great. These are going to be the people that'll help like hook me up with a job. And they all got laid off. I knew I was going to come back to LA because, you know, Boston had been enough city for me, and I loved visiting New York, but I'm definitely more of a West Coast person, and I knew I wanted to come back to LA, and obviously having my family still here helped. So I came back, and even though most of those people did let go, I was able to get a couple of other interviews through people there. But, you know, I really ended up getting my first job at Warner Music just from applying. There was a site at the time, I don't even think it exists more, but it was called Showbiz Jobs. And
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and there was there were two openings actually at Warner Music Group, and I ended up getting a job doing compilation licensing. So this was for like all the box sets that Warner Music would put out. It was licensing for that. And then the other job was film and TV licensing. Now, I didn't get that position because by the time I had flown back from school back to LA, that one was already filled. But the compilation licensing job was still open. And I thought, you know what? I can't really do another internship. I'd like to start getting paid. And I thought, this will get my foot in the door. And it did. But, you know, I don't think they would have hired me had I not had some of the internships, because they just wanted to make sure they had somebody with some music experience. Had I maybe just gone to a regular school and never done an internship at PolyGram or the thing with Aerosmith, and there were a couple other little brief internships that I had had with Rounder Records and Ryko Disc. I mean, again, two labels that aren't even around anymore, but that for sure got me the job. I mean, and they told me that is what got me the job. So it was at least my foot in the door to Warner.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I think that's really smart, though, too, that you pursued internships while still at Berkeley, so that, you know, because I've heard one of my guests was mentioning how she thought it would be more difficult if you go outside of LA for college, because then, you know, you're not in sort of the middle of the music industry and able to kind of start making connections right away. But it sounds like there was, you know, that wasn't an issue for you, because luckily you still had the experience.
Right. Yeah.
So it was able to be translated to Warner, and they were like, great, check, done.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and had I not been from LA, then yes. You know, if you have the opportunity to go to school here or do your internships here, then for sure, like that's going to be helpful, because if you're there, if there's going to be an opening, like you can start that day. That's obviously going to be helpful. But, you know, I really am happy that I went to Boston. I left my hometown just to, because I think equally as important is just going to another city, meeting people from around the country. I mean, and what was really cool about Berkeley is there were a ton, about 50% of the student body was from outside the United States. So, I mean, that experience was helpful just in life, you know, rather than, say, just staying in my bubble of LA. So, yeah, it's absolutely possible to go to school somewhere else and then move here, you know, or New York.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, like I said, I think it's like, you know, there's all paths may eventually lead to LA, but it doesn't mean you have to start in LA.
Totally. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
So walk us through, you know, the first few years at Warner and what that was like.
So yeah, Warner, like I said, I had gotten into compilation licensing, and although it wasn't totally the area I wanted to be in, like I said, because I had studied this, you know, a bit of the film scoring background, and, you know, really what I wanted to do after graduating was to be a music supervisor. You know, I had just learned what that was, and I had reached out to a ton of music supervisors. There just weren't any openings at the time. So getting, like I said, just at least getting my foot in the door at Warner, that allowed me to learn their catalog really well, especially with the compilation licensing for a lot of these, you know, reissues or catalog box sets. And like learning that catalog very well definitely helped me down the line when I was finally able to move into their film and TV licensing department, which was about 4 years later.
Oh, wow. So it was almost like graduate school.
Yeah, right. yeah, you know, I think because people were really happy in that film and TV department, people didn't leave. So you kind of had to stick around to get your moment in there. And finally, like I said, that happened after 4 years, and I was able to move into the area I wanted to be in. And at that time I was working on, particularly, video game music licensing and then international. So any sort of film and TV use that originates outside of the US. So it was good experience. And it was fun because working in international, I did get to do some travel for a neat conference that they had that was in Geneva, and then visiting our London office to meet the affiliates there. So all that was a great experience. I knew that my heart wasn't totally on video games, and for the international part, although it was interesting, everybody that I was dealing with was outside of the U.S. So I knew I wanted to get into U.S.-based licenses, or U.S.-based film and TV, just so that I'd be able to meet with people here and network more with everybody here. And so eventually when I was able to move over to Sony, that was able to happen. But for sure, the whole time that I was at Warner, I think they had a good program there where we had lunches where you could meet up with people from other departments. So I made it very clear to the people that were in film and TV that I wanted to be in that area. And I had a mentor in that department, and she really looked out for me so that once there finally was an opening, she was able to really influence the head of the department to say, hey, you should hire Diana and bring her over to this department. So yeah, just, you know, making sure you keep your name out there of, hey, this is where I want to be, so that people know when that timing is right and they already see you're a hard worker in a different area of the company. When those opportunities open up, it just increases your odds. So even within your own company, it's good to network. And then the person that ended up hiring me to join the film and TV department at Warner, he left and he had been working for Sony prior, came to Warner and then went back to Sony. And so when he had gone back to Sony, I want to say maybe a year, maybe 2 years later, I got a call saying, hey, would you like to come over and work at Sony for specifically working on the area of film and trailers? And I was like, all right, yeah, woohoo, this is what I wanted. Because like I mentioned, my heart wasn't totally set on video games and international. So it was great to be able to make that jump once I went over to Sony.
Now, were you weren't able to do any film or TV?
I did, but only if it originated outside of the U.S. So a U.K. producer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why it's smart for you to get more. It sounds like you wanted sort of more creative. I would imagine.
Yeah.
Sort of a more creative outlet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I mean, while all this was happening too, just the whole area of sync and, you know, and film and TV licensing opportunities, it's just been nothing but a growth area, which is really cool. Because I mean, I know when I graduated, you know, a couple of like artist managers that I was friends with, they had been in the business for a long time. A couple of them were really just kind of like, it's doomsday, you know, like Napster had started and everybody was illegally downloading music and they thought this is going to be the end of the music industry. But I always knew, you know, in the back of my mind, like, yeah, obviously it's horrible if everybody's just kind of stealing music, but I just knew it's never going to be the end of the music industry. It's everyone's always going to love music. There's always a need for music. And again, I think if you're just passionate about it, that's really what counts. And so that's what's great to see about sync and film and TV licensing is just to see that growth. So even as album sales have declined, record labels have become more and more dependent on getting syncs for artists. So it really has become a growth area where when I first joined, there were still artists that were kind of like, I don't want to license my music for this. Some still thought it was like uncool to have your song in a commercial. And other areas just kind of saw it also as this, the money was just kind of icing on the cake, because if their albums were still selling well, they weren't as dependent on getting these film and TV looks. And that, of course, has totally changed as the record sales had declined and they become more dependent on it. And then next thing you know, you got artists who maybe would have never cleared their music for, say, a commercial. Now they're like, sure, absolutely, sign me up, so that they, you know, just get more exposure for themselves. And now as we move into this world of streaming, and I mean, I think it's really an exciting time to be in the music industry, and for anyone who is graduating now and getting into it, just to see this shift where, you know, the record companies and artists are profitable with, you know, it's fractions of pennies for every stream, but still cumulatively it's growing, and it's it plays into also again into sync, because it's on us now in our department to help drive those streams by, say, getting a really cool look in a TV show or a film trailer or a film. So yeah, it's an exciting time to be in. It's like I said, I've been lucky in that in this particular area, it's always been an area of growth.
And I really love what you said, because you made me totally think, like, there was definitely a shift, because there was this point at which, you know, you were a sellout if, like, your music, you know, appeared on a commercial or, you know, anything sort of that wasn't like pure, authentic, you know. And I was thinking, like, when did it first start to change? And I think what I remember was like the Gap ads and the iPod ads. Uh-huh. I feel like that's when music started to get like really sexy again. Do you know what I mean? And like really fun and cool.
Yeah.
And you were like, who's that artist? What's that song? Oh my God, I want that song, you know, instead of like, oh my God, I can't believe so-and-so has a song in a truck commercial, you know?
I'm not just like selling a mop. It can look really cool. Yeah. The Apple spots. I remember when I was at Warner was when Cadillac used Led Zeppelin, their song.
And
that was just like, wow. Okay. Led Zeppelin's clearing for a commercial. So yeah, you know, it's just more and more artists who would have said they'd never license. It's just now you see everybody's doing it. And now it's more of a rarity to see somebody who says no.
Mm-hmm. And also just, you know, on the songwriting side, like, you know, going to seminars or workshop, it's like the stars are now the music supervisors.
Yeah.
You know, like that's who you want to see. That's who you want to hear from. That's who you want to meet.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me a little bit about your experience at Sony and just kind of how, you know, as you said, like that was great about Napster and just seeing that kind of evolution with music. And I think you're right. I think there was sort of this idea, this gloom and doom, like, oh my God, like this is it. It's over for everybody. And instead we've kind of entered this new landscape. Do you like what's kind of your insight from Sony about kind of the landscape of music, maybe, you know, from the past 10 years to today and then going forward?
Yeah, well, like I said,
I know that's a lot to unpack.
It's like I said, it really is a growth area. And with that comes, you know, a lot more pressure on our department. You know, what's cool about being at Sony, we do a little bit of both. So I'm actually handling the actual clearance, you know, going to the artist manager or the artist attorney to get approval and negotiating the fees with the production. That's half the job. And then the other half is actually pitching music to those music supervisors. And they are just approached by everyone. And so they have so much music to listen to. And even as a major label like Sony, we are constantly thinking of ways to reach them because, you know, they have a pile of music to listen to and how are we going to stand out? And then also it's become more popular for us to even, you know, take the artists to their office because they are so busy and we can't always get everybody to come out to the club to see a show or even to our office to see a showcase performance. We're actually bringing the artists to their conference room to do an acoustic performance or whatever, just to get their attention and say, hey, use us in your show. Because there is so much music out there. And we're, you know, constantly meeting with artists and just strategizing of where their music would fit well and contacting those music supervisors. And it's about relationships for sure. You know, we're wining and dining them, getting them to shows, like trying to any way to just get them to focus on our artists. And you know, to see like an awesome placement happen, you know, you'll see the spike in streams. So like I said, there's just a lot of attention now on licensing, because it can definitely break an artist these days. And with particularly songs becoming more, or just the nature of the business becoming more singles driven, that one sync could, like I said, just you'll see this. We get reports every week on the spikes in sales for particular uses, and you know, it's exciting to be in this area and just to know that you can really make a difference in somebody's career. I've even had for catalog artists where one sync in a film has now brought them into recoupment status. So maybe an artist who's been with a label a long time and their account has been unrecouped, and to see this sync money can really make a big difference. And now Now they're in the black and seeing money. So it's really exciting knowing that you're helping these artists out.
Now, do you find, I mean, this is kind of a broad question, but like, do you find that when you're pitching, are you trying to sort of focus more on, you know, artists that are kind of below the radar? Or is it more just kind of like, this is our stable and we feel that this, you know, these five artists, you know, regardless of how commercially successful they are, we feel like these five artists would be great for, like, say, you know, the series of Girls, you know, the show Girls or something like that. Like, I'm just curious how you guys approach.
Yeah. So our catalog is massive. And for sure,
right,
we're trying to, I mean, it's really, it's all over the place and it just depends on the show. You know, there's like a certain,
Got it.
That you see for Girls, maybe something more of like an indie sounding artist that you're going to pitch there. And then you have something like Stranger Things, where, you know, they're going to be using 80s music, or like Deadpool, where now they're getting into 90s music. That's another cool thing about being in film and TV licensing is it doesn't have to be the single for it to work. It just has to fit the scene. In certain cases, sure, if it's the big pop hit, great. It's going to work really well for a promo or, you know, maybe even a trailer or a commercial, because it's recognizable and companies that are paying tons of money, they're marketing money, they want to have a huge song attached to it, of course. But then there's other uses where it could be something totally obscure, or maybe even one of our artists from like outside the U.S. even gets placed, just because if the song is good and it works for the scene, they're going to use it. They don't always care if it's the totally known artist. So it's really across the board, and just depends on the show. Yeah, the tone of the show, or trailer, or film, whatever. Yeah.
Do you find, and again, I think this is a little bit of a myth, but I'm interested to get your take. Do you find that that, you know, does it ever come down to money? Like, does it ever come down to, we want Taylor Swift, but we can't afford Taylor Swift's, you know, cost.
Yeah.
So we want a Taylor Swift, you know, sound alike and song, you know, very similar song.
No, I mean, that happens all the time. I feel like daily, where it's something that, you know, production can't afford. I mean, and that's what we are constantly doing, is pitching stuff that we know, hey, you can't get Taylor Swift, but here's five other songs that sound like it. And then, of course, there's those artists where it's like, oh, man, we can't match that. That's just like, it's like you're Led Zeppelin, right? It's hard to place that. But yeah, no, that, and then that's what's cool. It's like the best is when a show does kind of go out on a limb and try somebody new, rather than just the same handful of 10 artists getting used over and over. I mean, that's just, it's boring. So it's, that comes up all the time. And,
Interesting.
Yeah. That's a big part of our job, is trying to replace other stuff. I mean, it even comes up where it's like, we can't even clear, say, one of our other artists is too expensive. And, you know, that's definitely a big part of the job, is just having other songs ready to go that might be a less expensive option, because it's always a struggle with budgets going down on projects all the time. I mean, we see that a lot, where the money budgeted particularly for music in a show or a film, they're just not spending the same way. I mean, certain films, of course, like your Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like they want just a massive soundtrack and some huge catalog hits, but then that's the exception. Like, most of the time, they're working on a really constrained budget, and so we're trying to obviously get the most we can for our artists, while at the same time trying to get exposure for new artists. So,
Diana, how the hell do you keep track of everything that's coming out when you've got like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and film and TV and cable and HBO? Like, how do you just watch? Are you just like watching TV like 24/7, 365? Like, how do you keep track of everything that's coming out? Because content, it's just like it's just getting generated so fast.
Right.
So how do you keep up?
I mean, and that's again, like I was speaking about it before, but that is what is exciting, is that it's a growth area, and it has been the entire time I've been in the industry. So that's just another exciting part of it, is that there is so much content now, and all of that content needs music and various budgets, of course. So that's where you're hoping to get your baby band in there, or something where you know they're going to have a massive budget, and it's like, great, we can get some of our huge hits in there. But you know, we have a huge department, and that's how.
So good.
We have to, we split it up, by music supervisor and by, various, like film studios or TV networks. There's a lot of us, just cause we have so much music and there are so many shows. We have had a shift just within our own department where it was a lot more divided, where I would really just specifically work on film and trailer. And we were part of like the film team. And then there was the TV team, and they worked on the TV shows. And with just the massive amount of content coming out, particularly with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, there has had to be this shift where all of us working that were just working on films have taken on a lot of TV work as well. In my particular area, because I do still strongly focus on trailers, what you know we've noticed for several years now is a ton of trailer houses are also working on TV promos. So I've moved into that area as well. So like, for example, I'll work on Netflix promos. So, yeah, I mean, if it was up to, if we had a department of four people, it's just so much content to keep track of. But luckily, there are a lot of us. But even with as many as us, there's just no way. None of us can keep up with the shows. So, well, at least that's good. Our water cooler talk. We can, whoever didn't watch, you know, Big Little Lies that week can catch up the other person. And we're constantly in meetings talking about the different shows and you know, the department works really well together. We collaborate well. And so if, say, someone didn't catch something, you know, say, hey, this could work really well for Insecure or, you know, 13 Reasons Why, like, we'll all share ideas. And so that's nice. You know, it is a really great team. 'Cause otherwise, yeah, there's just too much to keep track of. And, you know, even with as big as our department is, we still can't, I'd have to just not sleep anymore and to watch all the shows.
Right. Exactly. And now I think, you know, like YouTube is going to be, you know, much more of a big player. And oh God, somebody else is like coming out with, was it Disney's going to be like coming out with their version of Netflix or something like that?
And I mean, Spotify has a bunch of original content, although their focus still is on like artist documentaries. But Apple is coming out with original productions. And it's just endless, which is great.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, that becomes a challenge too, is just figuring out, because before it was very standard. It was like, this is what you charge for a TV show. This is what you charge for a film. And of course, it would vary here and there depending on their budgets. But now it's also the record label, you know, we need to keep up with it, with a lot of this this new content and what to charge for it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, with, as you said, with streaming and, you know, downloads are basically becoming a thing of the past. So it's like, if we're just getting pennies, you know, for streaming, other sources of income, i.e., you know, content, think, how does that, you know, how does that translate? How does that support the artist, et cetera, et cetera. So I just hope you're getting enough sleep at night.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Diana. I am just blown away by all your knowledge and everything you have to do every day to keep us entertained. So just really, really grateful for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Again, special thanks to Diana. She was amazing and taking the time out of her insanely busy schedule and dealing with all this new content that's coming down the pike. Just really grateful for sharing her career with us and sharing her insight on what is happening in music these days and all the opportunities that are available right now for artists. It's just a really exciting time, so really grateful to her. Okay, so thus ends episode 24. Very, very happy about that. Again, we're at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. If you are listening on one of the streaming platforms, we would love it if you would give us some love, give us some stars, give us a review. Let us get up there in the rankings so we can share this podcast with more people, especially people looking for a career in music. We would really appreciate that. I am your host, Ariel. I have an EP coming out. I will announce the drop date very soon, as soon as I figure that out, but I'm very excited to share it with y'all. My website to check out my music is lariel.com. That's lariel.com. You can also reach out to me at lariel.music. And I hope everyone has an amazing, wonderful week. And remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't give up.